Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
On News Talk.
Yes, Ask the GP. Dr. Nina Burns, who's a GP at Generation Health Medical Clinic, is with me in studio to answer all of your questions. How are you doing, Nina?
Good. Nice.
All good. 087 1400 106 is the WhatsApp number. Listener says, my entire family has had an awful dose for about a month. I was on antibiotics. I can't seem to shift it. I feel okay, but the cough has persisted and I'm exhausted. Any thoughts or ideas?
Yeah, I can share that pain, actually. I spent last week apologising to patients for sounding like I smoked 20 a day, so I'm feeling your pain. And I agree with you, this cough lingers even after the infectivity part is long gone. Look, all I can say is obviously any cough that isn't going away, do go to your GP and get checked. It's important that someone has a listen to your chest and just makes sure that you haven't got any kind of lingering infection that might require some treatment. Certainly, you know, drinking fluids. When your throat is irritated, when we cough, we kind of irritate the throat. And then the more you cough, the more you irritate it. So having fluids, taking sips, you know, the old fashioned grandmother's remedy of a kind of teaspoon of honey or something to soothe the throat. I had one lovely patient walk out after a consult and arrive back in with a pack of whole soothers.
Oh, really? Oh, God.
So if you're listening, Maria, thank you. Any of those things that soothe the throat are really helpful. But it should settle. And what happens is the cough doesn't mean infection. It means inflammation. And sometimes the inflammation lingers longer than in others, but it should ultimately ease. Adding in an antihistamine can help. Sometimes if your sinuses are very congested, there can be a bit of dripping that irritates the throat. So they're all kind of over-the-counter things you can try. But if it's not settling, do go see your doctor. They should have a listen to your chest and just make sure everything's okay.
What advice would you give to a parent of a very active, healthy 14-year-old boy who's underweight? BMI of 17.3, which is classed as underweight. Is it anything to worry about or just try to get more meals into his day?
So I suppose in teenagers, we don't always use BMI. We use centiles in younger people up to the age of 18. So that's really where you come in, you have your height and weight done, and then you're measured against kind of 100 people your age. So parents would be very familiar with this with babies, where they'll say they're on the 50th or the 75th centile. But actually, we use that to track along, because as anyone knows, you could put 10, 14-year-old boys on any kind of pitch or something, and you'd think some of them look like adult men and some of them look like children. So the range is hugely different at that age. It is important that they're eating plenty. I mean, a 14-year-old boy is probably, if hasn't hit their growth spurt, will very soon, and nutrition's incredibly important. So they really have high energy needs. They need to eat plenty. They need lots of protein, lots of dairy for those growing bones, vitamin D, healthy fats. But again, I would say to anyone, do go along, chat to the doctor. Do watch out for, are they restricting food? Unfortunately, you know, we think of eating disorders a lot in young girls, but you know, we see it increasingly in boys, that they're very aware of, you know, body habitus, and they're all online looking at what a man should look like. And, you know, sometimes they're trying to eat so clean that they're actually just not getting enough to eat. So it's really important to have conversations around it. But in the majority of cases, I would not go based on BMI. Okay. And it may be that this child is perfectly healthy on centiles.
Listener says, over a year ago, I had an episode where I woke up and wasn't able to breathe. I had a cough at the time. This was the first of many episodes. And on one occasion, I had two back to back, after which I collapsed. I was only out for a few seconds. I was diagnosed with whooping cough. I had to take Gaviscon at the time quite a lot. I do feel a lot better now, but I still feel like when I cough sometimes, I could have an episode. I hold my breath and it passes. Will it ever go away as a symptom? I'm now living in fear of losing my breath after, you know, now and again after coughing.
Certainly that sounds very frightening, isn't it? So whooping cough, you can get fits of coughing, and sometimes you can cough so much that you can actually slow your heart. Your vagal nerve, which is the nerve that controls heart rate, can be affected, because when you cough, you effectively hold your breath for that split second, and your pressure in your chest can go up and then down, and it affects heart rate. But in saying that, I suppose there are just two things you mentioned there that were causing me a little bit of concern. The fact that they blacked out, and second of all, that they had to take Gaviscon a lot, because if they were having heartburn symptoms and blacking out, I guess I would want to make sure that there wasn't anything cardiac in this, that their heart was okay. So obviously do go along, go to your doctor, have some baseline checks done, you know, baseline tracing of the heart, baseline bloods. Have a chat with them in more detail about the symptoms and how they happened. And it would be important just to have all that checked out, because it's not normal to pass out with coughing.
No. 087 1400 106, the WhatsApp number. Listener has a bulge when in their sit-up position. They had hernia surgery a couple of years ago. No pain, but have had hard bulges on the side of their abdominal area. Any advice?
So when they say in the sit-up, I guess a lot of women after pregnancy, we'd be very familiar that after they've had a baby, the muscles that normally come together in the middle of your abdomen, there can be a bit of a gap. And as it comes back down, sometimes if they kind of do that sit-up position, they'll feel a bit of a bulge. And over time, that settles. But that can be a hernia. It can be a thing called divarcation of the recti muscles, which are the you know, if you think of looking at some of the pictures with people with muscles, you can see these kind of linear muscles in the front, and there can be a gap. So go along and get checked. Your doctor can examine you and decide. Just because you had a hernia a few years ago, unfortunately, doesn't mean it hasn't come back, and they do in some people. So do and get it checked. The side of the abdominal area, it's a little more, if it's the middle of the abdomen, it's a little more unusual place for hernia. You can certainly down low in the groin, you can get inguinal hernias, which would be either side, and again, would be a slightly different hernia. So this person, you do need to be examined. Someone needs to kind of check the muscles and just see what it is.
Okay. Please ask Dr. Nina her opinion on peripheral neuropathy. Will it ever abate?
Peripheral neuropathy is hard. That's when you have a nerve that, you know, peripheral meaning outside the center, often it's hands or feet, where a nerve is just not functioning the way it should for whatever reason. And there are a whole load of causes. This is one of these questions in medical school where you practice lists. You know, someone's going to ask you the causes of peripheral neuropathy because they're incredibly long. And it's important that you go to your doctor. Your doctor will be working through that list in their head. Simple things like some vitamin deficiencies can cause them. Obviously, in diabetes, people can get them. And unfortunately, it's not always reversible. Or it can be local damage. Like if you have, you know, if you've nerve pinched in your spine or whatever, it can lead to symptoms further down. So unfortunately, I can't answer that question because I don't know what the cause is. But some causes are reversible. Unfortunately, some aren't. Yeah.
Listener Nina recently had an anaphylaxis episode and has been prescribed an EpiPen by the consultant in the hospital and GP for additional. I've been referred for an immunologist appointment, but do not want to go through the allergy panel given the recent anaphylaxis event. Which, would it be advisable to postpone the appointment, or is it necessary considering the root cause was identified in the A&E department?
So actually, this is a great question, and it's something we don't get asked very often, because people traditionally would think, I'm allergic to something, I have to avoid it for the rest of my life, end of. Immunology and allergy treatment has moved on from that. And yes, while you absolutely need to avoid it when you're home, it's actually really important that they go to this immunology appointment, because the immunology appointment isn't just about finding what you're allergic to. It sounds like they know what you're allergic to, but modern immunology also does what they call controlled exposure. So they start working with people and they check for other similar allergies, and then they actually work to try and get people to see what level of a certain thing they can tolerate. These tests should only be ever done in a centre that treats allergies and anaphylaxis, because they are done in centres where all the facilities are immediately available to you, and all the resuscitation should anything happen is available. But particularly say something like peanut allergy, which is a very serious life-threatening allergy, what the immunologists do now is they start exposing people to the tiniest, tiniest amount, and they get to a level where they can tolerate. And actually, it's really important, because if they are exposed in the community, having that tiny amount of tolerance, and the amount varies massively from person to person, and some people don't tolerate any, but if they can tolerate some, it almost buys them time in the event of an exposure to get their pen, to get the pen in, and then obviously to go to hospital. And I'm going to add on to this. Anyone out there who carries adrenaline pens, who has an allergy, who has used the adrenaline pen, if you feel fine after, you still need to go to hospital. Okay. So I kind of, the short answer to all of this is yes, absolutely go to immunology. And for anyone else who has allergies, just because you know what it is, just because you carry an adrenaline pen, doesn't mean you shouldn't be going along.
You need to go
to hospital when needed. Yeah.
And just a final one on this, Nina, and I hope I pronounce this correctly now. What foods should I eat to ease? Is it sarcoidosis of the lungs? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Sarcoidosis. Oh, sarcoidosis. Well, sarcoidosis is an inflammatory autoimmune condition where you get kind of inflammation. It can happen. The lungs is the most common, but it can actually affect other tissue. It can affect the eyes. It can affect the heart. So it's not something you can treat with diet. It's an autoimmune condition. I guess anyone with autoimmune conditions, I use the word nourish. I hate the word diet. If you have any kind of chronic disease, making sure you're getting all the nutrients you need is important. But if you have sarcoidosis, obviously taking any treatment prescribed and attending your specialist for appointments is also equally important.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We'll leave it there for the moment. Dr. Nina Burns, who's a GP at the Generation Health Medical Clinic. Nina, thanks a million for joining us here on the show. You can get more from Nina on X at Dr. Nina Burns, or check out the website at generationhealth.ie. The email is lunchtimelive@newstalk.com.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.